Lila's Bucket. Hardwood Flats does not appear on most local maps, but is used by locals to describe an unmarked space between Elmore, Woolcott, and Worcester. It's a hardscrabble bog of isolated ponds, marshland, and mixed second-growth hardwoods and occasional stands of young evergreens. Walking in the woods, one can always hear running water somewhere. Much of its terrain seems to float on an inland sea. Here and there, a few dirt roads, passable except in mud season, wind through the woods, feeding into corduroyed logging roads and then tapering off into hunting trails and deer yards. Occasional year-round dwellings nestle here and there on the passable roads. Hunters or hikers will occasionally run across abandoned farmhouses moldering in clearings marked only by their overgrown lilac bushes or unpruned apple trees. Further in, they may encounter a tar-paper deer camp with sun-bleached antler racks over a padlocked door. Lila and her husband, Theron, lived most of their lives in the flats, coming out occasionally to the Elmore store to trade for necessities. Lila was 91 and Theron 93. Lila didn't get the sugar early like her girlfriend, Flo, who suffers from terrible dropsy. Lila was diagnosed at 87. And except for a few skin cancers and a locked-up shoulder, Theron has kept his health. He grows cut flowers and root vegetables to sell at the Morrisville Farmers Market or to aged hippies who sometimes come to their ramshackled house to buy them right out of Theron's stone-lined root cellar, where they're available year-round. Rena LeClaire, the Morristown home health nurse, had been troubled for some time over Theron's steadfast rejection of her services. She took great pride in the home-based care she provided for the town's senior citizens. Last year, Rena was cited by the county for her conscientious service to seniors living at home. It was suggested by some that she contributed to the economic demise of Copley Manor, the town home for dependent seniors. Much to Rena's dismay, Theron rejected Rena's services outright. Theron told her he didn't want her snooping around his house looking for violations and the like. Rena was not accustomed to such out-and-out rejection. Occasionally, she encountered reticence on the part of a senior or family member that she attributed to modesty, Yankee independence, or pride, but she usually prevailed, patiently explaining that she's only there to help out, and doing so only to the extent that her charge permitted. Most of the seniors on her route came to look forward to her ministrations in her company. She brought the mail, a clutch of local gossip, and light groceries if called in advance. While there, she changed bed linens, ran a load of wash if there was a machine, discarded old food, bathed those in her care, and with great authority, checked their vitals. One of Rena's charges, who was hard of hearing and kept the hearing aid she brought him in the icebox so the batteries wouldn't run down, would hear vittles and insist that he had plenty to eat, then let her check his pulse and blood pressure. Lila's sugar progressed very quickly. She's a large woman, but not loosely fat like today's pale-fleshed girls. She's always been heavy, but the weight that collected over the years like a retirement plan was evenly muscled by the steady routines of chores and helping Theron with his endless gardens and homemade greenhouses that sprung up here and there on their 12 acres. Last anyone heard, a diabetic stroke had left her incapable of speech and partially paralyzed. This bit of news heightened considerably Rena's sense of urgency about Lila. She suspected things weren't right in their home and that Theron had his reasons for denying her access to Lila. She started up her rusty Subaru wagon and headed up Route 12 towards Elmore, turning off just north of the lake and bouncing along the flats road until the turnoff that led deep into the pucker brush and finally to Theron and Lila's homestead. She pulled up into the dirt driveway, set the parking brake, and waited a minute, as she always did, to give people a chance to gather themselves before she knocked on the door. Theron was just coming in from the woodpile with an armload of biscuit wood for the cook stove. A bright sun shone through the clouds. He spotted Rena and walked purposely over to the car before she could get out, setting the firewood down hard on the hood of her car and peering into the closed window. Unable to get out, she rolled down her window and began, "Now you see here. No need to get out. You ain't staying and I ain't visiting. We's done fine without you." Rena only got more upset. "Theron, I'm not here to see you. I come here to see Lila. She's a sick woman, and it's my job to take care of her and to see that she gets medical care."
"She's been to the hospital. They sent her home and told me to care for her, and I do."
"You can't. You don't know how. She's diabetic. Lila needs special care."
"I gives her sugar medicine and sees to her. Now get!"
"Theron, I don't know what you're hiding, but I'm coming back with the sheriff."
"Best bring two, you old bitch. Now get."
Rena drove off down the road, her chin high and her hands tight on the steering wheel, which seemed to have a mind of its own in the muddy ruts of the thawing road. Something was not right in that household. The more Rena thought on it, the more her instincts told her Theron was hiding something to do with Lila. Folks often resisted the idea of someone from outside doing for them. Even after 7 years, Rena herself spent a good hour tidying up her own modest home before Vi, her cleaning lady, came to redo the same. Rena didn't want it bruited about the community that she kept an untidy home and Vi was a gossip. Theron's overt hostility clearly indicated to Rena that he was hiding something. She'd seen enough in her lifetime of service to suspect men who were secretive and to fear that physical abuse might be the reason. Occasionally, the fatigue and resentment of caring for someone day in and day out could erupt into abuse. Rena remembered that some time back, Theron had had a run-in with the game warden for jacking deer on his own property. He claimed that he and Lila needed the meat. The confrontation escalated into a tussle, after which the warden sported a black eye. No charges were ever brought, and Theron was more discreet thereafter, but clearly, Theron had it in him to strike out. She drove straight to Willard Sanders' office. Willard ran the county social welfare office in Morristown. Before these services were consolidated in Montpelier, Willard had been the overseer of the poor, an office charged with caring for those unable to provide for themselves within the town. Willard was known as a fair man. One couldn't put one over on Mr. Sanders. He could easily distinguish between sloth and need and was not afraid to do so. But he also understood the stress and indignity that poverty placed on families. It was in his nature to treat those in his care with great respect, and he made sure that Rena did as well. His father's sister had died young in the county poor farm. Thursday afternoons at 4, Rena reported to him on her service visits, noting any changes in health, family problems, or household issues. Sometimes folks ran out of wood before winter ran out of cold, or well lines froze up, leaving people without water. In time, their charges either died quietly at home or came to the hospital to die. It took Willard several minutes to calm Rena down. By this time, Rena had worked up a pretty strong case that Lila was at risk. Theron's rabid behavior when Rena tried to see Lila made clear that something not right was happening in that household. "Lila might be the victim of this crazy old goat," she exclaimed. Willard listened calmly to Rena, asked a few questions, and promised to follow up with a visit of his own the following day. This did little to calm Rena, and she urged that they return together immediately to rescue Lila. "Theron and Lila have survived 70 years together. Another day's not going to make a difference," said Willard with calm finality. Rena left shaking her head. After a reheated meatloaf supper, she checked her four-party line and, finding an interlude after a few tries, began dialing her network of chatty friends to try and garner support for her assessment of the danger Lila was in.
Willard's going up tomorrow. Won't take me. Thinks it may be too dangerous, she told Gert, a nurse friend of hers who lived in Morristown Corners. She may be blind by now. God knows, stroke left her part paralyzed. The old fool probably doesn't even know she needs a special diet. Probably feeds her candy bars. Even if he don't abuse her, he's probably killing her out of ignorance. It just troubles me. He won't let me near the house. He's hiding something, I know it.
The next day, the sun burned through the morning clouds by 10 o'clock, and the sky was radiant blue. The air was still crisp, but spring was definitely in the air. Sugar makers were hard at it, driving their teams through the woods, collecting sap in big, sledge-mounted galvanized tanks. Willard started up to the flats in his Plymouth, trying to reconcile Rena's urgent report with the little he knew of Theron and Lila. The couple had never asked for help from his office, and as far as he knew, kept a modest household supported by the sale of Theron's root vegetables and cut flowers. Willard had not seen Lila for a good 20 years, and only then, once or twice a year when they came to Graves Hardware or Gillen's department store. Although determined to get to the bottom of Rena's report, Willard felt little apprehension as he followed the rutted roads deeper into Hardwood Flats. The sun was blazing down as the road wound into the endless stand of boggy alders, and the rich smell of earth melting and water running again lifted his spirits. It had been a long winter. Rena had written down the directions to Theron's farmstead, as there were no accurate maps of the area, divided as it was between the three towns. Willard remembered hunting here as a kid with his friend Eddie Katonis, and getting lost, finally finding their way to a large fire in a nearby logging camp at dusk, then having to spend the night there and following a new road out to Elmore the following morning. Willard did not pull into Theron's yard, but drove further down the road, parked, and walked back to Theron's. He climbed the uneven cinder block steps to the steeply tilted porch and knocked on the screen door. He heard footsteps inside, and Theron came to the door.
"Twant," asked Theron. "Veggies? Flowers won't be ready for another 6 weeks."
My name is Willard Sanders, and I came to inquire about how you and Lila are getting along," asked Willard, looking Theron square in the eye.
"Good enough," lied Theron. "That nosy bitch Rena send you?"
"No, I came on my own," said Willard gently. "It's been a long, cold winter, and some folks is just having a hard time of it, and I've been checking on a few of them."
"You from that newfangled church what haunts people with their home preaching?"
"No, I come from town, and my job is just to see to folks. How you and Lila doing? I know Lila suffers from the sugar." Willard's calm tone of voice and willingness to look Theron in the eye seemed to allay somewhat his suspicion of the stranger, and he asked Willard in off the porch. He pointed to a rocker next to the big Glenwood cook stove and slid the enameled coffee pot left so it was directly over the firebox. Willard settled in and was comfortable with the long silence.
"Just tell me what you want to know and don't be beating around the bush," said Theron quietly, setting a mug of black coffee and a mayonnaise jar full of sugar in front of Willard on the cooler edge of the stove.
"Well, I heard Lila suffered a stroke, and it must be hard caring for her. Can she walk around? Did she lose her speech?"
"We make do well enough. She can't walk, shuffles a bit, and I got to hold her up. She lets me know how she's feeling by smiling or frowning. It's about it since she suffered the sugar shock."
"When you tend your greenhouses and gardens, does she stay in the house alone?" Willard asked, stirring some sugar into his coffee and looking up at Theron.
"Oh, I put her in the bucket," answered Theron, sipping his own coffee.
"The bucket?" asked Willard.
"The bucket," answered Theron.
I don't understand," said Willard.
"The bucket on my tractor. Come here, I'll show you."
Willard rose to follow Theron out the back door towards a ragtag array of greenhouses made out of scavenged windows and lumber. Near a cold frame was parked an old narrow front end Alice Chalmers with a bucket loader suspended by its hydraulics about 4 feet off the boggy ground. It was wrapped entirely in an old tarp and tied neatly with baling twine. Theron untied the tarp and pulled it away, folding it and putting it on the tractor seat. Carefully arranged in the bucket loader lay an old mattress on a thick bed of dry hay. There were a couple of old couch pillows at each end.
"I rigged this up for Lila, 'cause she likes to be with me when I's working. I lays her down on the porch and roll her onto the mattress. Then I cover her up with her mama's quilt and some feather pillows. I gets her comfortable and she smiles. I know she likes it. I use these old straps to make sure she don't fall out when she shifts around. Then I lifts her up high and drives her to wherever I's working. Sometimes a garden, sometimes a greenhouse or the root cellar. She likes being where I's at."
Willard just stared at the contraption.
"Looks mighty comfortable to me," he allowed.
"Well, 'tis. I tried it myself. After a while, Lola doze off in the sun, and I wakes her with my special homemade tomato juice she likes so much. Weather's nice like today, we have lunch where I's working."
"I know you're a busy man, Theron, and spring's surely coming, so I'll be on my way. If you ever need anything, please call on me."
"No phone, but I can get them old hippies down the road to call. Thanks for coming by. Try to keep that bitch, Rowena, from coming. She's always looking for trouble, even if there ain't none to be had."
"I will," promised Willard. In August, Lila died. Dr. Phil was with her when she died and allowed to the nurse by his side that he'd never seen a diabetic patient with such clear and unbroken skin. In November, Denny Lefebvre, a neighbor, reported that Theron had took a corollary in the woods and died.